Section 1. Listening. This section of the test has three parts. You will hear three recordings which you will listen to twice. While listening, answer the questions in the appropriate part of the test. Follow the instructions. When answering questions in the first and second parts, use the answer sheet labelled with a cross. When answering questions in the third part, use the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Now prepare the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Part 1. You will hear the first recording. For the following statements, 1 to 7, choose only one correct answer. Mark your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part one.
A product of the New York public school system, internationally best-selling author and playwright Warren Adler graduated from New York University. His novels have been translated into more than 24 languages, and 2 have become major motion pictures. Warren, was there anyone who really influenced your decision to become a writer when you were very young?
My mother was a keen reader, which probably gave me the idea that writing was an important profession. But my real inspiration was my freshman English teacher at New York University, Don M. Wolfe. He was truly the one who put the idea in my head that I might have the talent to follow a career in the writing game.
You had quite an unusual path for an author, already being a success in business before you turned to writing. What led to the publication of your first book?
I had longed to be a writer since my freshman days in college, but various obstacles prevented it. I married young and was faced with supporting my growing family. I had a business spirit and decided to found my own advertising agency. During that period, a man walked into my office wanting my agency to promote his book. When he asked for our prices, I told him that his only fee would be if he could get his publisher to publish my first novel. The publisher read the novel which had been written and proceeded to publish it.
I'd like to talk about your new book, Morning Glory. How did this book come about?
I have been a frequent visitor to Palm Beach. Its closely ranked society always fascinated me, and I've always wondered if there was a shortcut into that society. In my writing, I'm always exploring the nature of love and attraction and how it can, by some mysterious chemistry, make changes in one's life that are not immediately obvious. The story is also about the dark side of wealth.
The main character in the book is Grace Sorrentino, a 30-year-old divorced mom who takes some rather drastic steps to find a better life for herself and her daughter. How did you create Grace? What was your inspiration for her?
I know many women who could serve as the model for Grace. They are desperate, cast aside, taken for granted, and with little prospect of enjoying a better life. Only the strongest and most imaginative can find their way out of this chaos. Grace is one of those, and I love her courage and determination. Even as I wrote this novel, I knew Grace would find the right path.
Let's talk about ebooks. How did you get interested in this technology? Have you always been interested in emerging technologies, or is this a new interest for you?
The impact of new technologies on authors is very intense. It will open a window of opportunity to re-release all my backlist to potential readers throughout the world. Any author who does not take advantage of these new technologies, ebooks, and print on demand, is missing the boat. I hope I will show them the way.
When you write novels and plays, do you have a particular audience in mind?
I write what I need to write and estimate that the core of my audience are intelligent adults from the age of 30 and above who live an essentially middle-class life, are of both genders, and are searching to make sense out of contemporary life, which is a difficult task.
I'd like to turn to the Jackson Hole Writers Conference. Please tell us how that came about. What were your goals in founding the conference?
Having lived a long time in the writing world and enjoyed the company of my fellow writers, I figured that Jackson Hole, because of its beauty and infrastructure, might be a perfect place to welcome writers who needed a helping hand in both their work and their marketing. Besides, I spend lots of time here and enjoy helping writers gain their objectives.
Now listen again.
A product of the New York public school system, internationally best-selling author and playwright Warren Adler graduated from New York University. His novels have been translated into more than 24 languages, and 2 have become major motion pictures. Warren, was there anyone who really influenced your decision to become a writer when you were very young?
My mother was a keen reader, which probably gave me the idea that writing was an important profession. But my real inspiration was my freshman English teacher at New York University, Don M. Wolfe. He was truly the one who put the idea in my head that I might have the talent to follow a career in the writing game.
You had quite an unusual path for an author, already being a success in business before you turned to writing. What led to the publication of your first book?
I had longed to be a writer since my freshman days in college, but various obstacles prevented it. I married young and was faced with supporting my growing family. I had a business spirit and decided to found my own advertising agency. During that period, a man walked into my office wanting my agency to promote his book. When he asked for our prices, I told him that his only fee would be if he could get his publisher to publish my first novel. The publisher read the novel which had been written and proceeded to publish it.
I'd like to talk about your new book, Morning Glory. How did this book come about?
I have been a frequent visitor to Palm Beach. Its closely ranked society always fascinated me, and I've always wondered if there was a shortcut into that society. In my writing, I'm always exploring the nature of love and attraction and how it can, by some mysterious chemistry, make changes in one's life that are not immediately obvious. The story is also about the dark side of wealth.
The main character in the book is Grace Sorrentino, a 30-year-old divorced mom who takes some rather drastic steps to find a better life for herself and her daughter. How did you create Grace? What was your inspiration for her?
I know many women who could serve as the model for Grace. They are desperate, cast aside, taken for granted, and with little prospect of enjoying a better life. Only the strongest and most imaginative can find their way out of this chaos. Grace is one of those, and I love her courage and determination. Even as I wrote this novel, I knew Grace would find the right path.
Let's talk about ebooks. How did you get interested in this technology? Have you always been interested in emerging technologies, or is this a new interest for you?
The impact of new technologies on authors is very intense. It will open a window of opportunity to re-release all my backlist to potential readers throughout the world. Any author who does not take advantage of these new technologies, ebooks, and print on demand, is missing the boat. I hope I will show them the way.
When you write novels and plays, do you have a particular audience in mind?
I write what I need to write and estimate that the core of my audience are intelligent adults from the age of 30 and above who live an essentially middle-class life, are of both genders, and are searching to make sense out of contemporary life, which is a difficult task.
I'd like to turn to the Jackson Hole Writers Conference. Please tell us how that came about. What were your goals in founding the conference?
Having lived a long time in the writing world and enjoyed the company of my fellow writers, I figured that Jackson Hole, because of its beauty and infrastructure, might be a perfect place to welcome writers who needed a helping hand in both their work and their marketing. Besides, I spend lots of time here and enjoy helping writers gain their objectives.
Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. Part 2. You will hear the second recording. For questions 8 to 13, decide whether the statements are true, A, false, B, or whether the information was not given, C. Mark your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part 2.
Mandy Hickson, aged 50, was one of the first female jet pilots in the RAF, the Royal Air Force in the United Kingdom. It has not been an easy path. Mandy, will you tell us more about it?
I was 13 when the Air Cadets opened their door to girls and was one of the first to join. My granddad had filled my head with his tales of flying in the Second World War. Women couldn't be RAF pilots then, so I thought I'd join the police, but my first flight with the Air Cadets changed that. Flying is like dancing in the sky. There's no freedom like it. As a student, I joined the University Air Squadron and completed 160 hours of flying. While at university, the RAF started allowing women to serve on the front line. I applied twice, but failed the aptitude tests. Luckily, my air squadron boss believed in me and had two independent examiners assess me. They both graded me above average. It turned out many women were failing the computerized aptitude tests because they'd only been tested on men before. The RAF took me on as an air traffic controller. Once in, I fought to be accepted onto the pilot training course. Fast jet training takes about 5 years. It's a mix of ground school, mechanics, meteorology, flying in a simulator, and actual flying. I began in a small propeller aircraft, which flies at 120 miles per hour, then the Tucano, which goes double that. From there, I moved on to the Hawk, and after that, I became only the second woman to fly a Tornado GR4 on the front line. I had a positive experience in the RAF, but I was treated differently with remarks such as, "We can tell which plane Mandy flew, the one that's badly parked," or "Mandy will be late as she's doing her makeup." I simply developed a thick skin after such treatment. My first mission was defending the no-fly zone in Iraq. I remember seeing little black clouds around me and wondering what they were, until I realized it was gunfire aimed at us. We quickly got out of there. Later, we found out who was shooting. He was just a local boy, and it felt very sad. I served 17 years in the Royal Air Force with missions in France, Denmark, Canada, and America. I met my husband, Craig, in 1995. He was a pilot in the Royal Navy. After I became a mom, I was expected to return to the front line. I said, "I have a four-month-old. I'm breastfeeding. I can't go to Afghanistan." They didn't know what to do with a female pilot with children. I took a second-line job, updating the pilot's manual for the Tornado. Only the Tornado pilot could do this, so it was perfect. In 2011, I left the Air Force, age 38. I had reached the end of my contract, and I knew it was the right time.
Now listen again.
Mandy Hickson, aged 50, was one of the first female jet pilots in the RAF, the Royal Air Force in the United Kingdom. It has not been an easy path. Mandy, will you tell us more about it?
I was 13 when the Air Cadets opened their door to girls and was one of the first to join. My granddad had filled my head with his tales of flying in the Second World War. Women couldn't be RAF pilots then, so I thought I'd join the police, but my first flight with the Air Cadets changed that. Flying is like dancing in the sky. There's no freedom like it. As a student, I joined the University Air Squadron and completed 160 hours of flying. While at university, the RAF started allowing women to serve on the front line. I applied twice, but failed the aptitude tests. Luckily, my air squadron boss believed in me and had two independent examiners assess me. They both graded me above average. It turned out many women were failing the computerized aptitude tests because they'd only been tested on men before. The RAF took me on as an air traffic controller. Once in, I fought to be accepted onto the pilot training course. Fast jet training takes about 5 years. It's a mix of ground school, mechanics, meteorology, flying in a simulator, and actual flying. I began in a small propeller aircraft, which flies at 120 miles per hour, then the Tucano, which goes double that. From there, I moved on to the Hawk, and after that, I became only the second woman to fly a Tornado GR4 on the front line. I had a positive experience in the RAF, but I was treated differently with remarks such as, "We can tell which plane Mandy flew, the one that's badly parked," or "Mandy will be late as she's doing her makeup." I simply developed a thick skin after such treatment. My first mission was defending the no-fly zone in Iraq. I remember seeing little black clouds around me and wondering what they were, until I realized it was gunfire aimed at us. We quickly got out of there. Later, we found out who was shooting. He was just a local boy, and it felt very sad. I served 17 years in the Royal Air Force with missions in France, Denmark, Canada, and America. I met my husband, Craig, in 1995. He was a pilot in the Royal Navy. After I became a mom, I was expected to return to the front line. I said, "I have a 4-month-old. I'm breastfeeding. I can't go to Afghanistan." They didn't know what to do with a female pilot with children. I took a second line job, updating the pilot's manual for the Tornado. Only the Tornado pilot could do this, so it was perfect. In 2011, I left the Air Force, age 38. I had reached the end of my contract and I knew it was the right time.
Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. Now look at part 3. For part 3, you will need the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Please find and prepare it. Part 3. You will hear the third recording. Below, you can read summaries of the information numbered 14 to 20, which are in the wrong order. Indicate the order in which you hear the information by writing a number 1 to 6 next to the number that represents that information. Be careful, there is one extra summary. Put X next to the number that represents extra information. Write your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part 3. Once you graduate from college, your next immediate concern is how to succeed in your career. Because the world has become so competitive, doing well in your job and moving forward with your career is more important now than ever. In our program, you will hear 6 tips on how to be excellent at work. Tip number 1. Today's career requirements are highly developed and require much more than someone who is not willing to take risks. In today's competitive professional market, employers are looking for individuals who can bring fresh ideas to the table and start new projects, come up with new ideas, and create new opportunities for the business. Tip number 2. To excel in your career, you have to be willing to learn to become a leader. No matter what university you graduated from or what grades you had, professional life will be very different from college. Be prepared to have a million questions every day regarding what you're doing. It might take you days to get used to your duties at your new job, so show management that you are coachable, paying attention, and always willing to discover new things. Tip number 3. Remember, you're not being paid for working hard or staying busy. At the end of the day, what matters to your employer is how you're contributing to fulfilling the company's aims and mission, both short-term and long-term. Therefore, keep in mind that you're being paid to contribute to the company's performance and vision. Bearing these aims in mind will help you achieve career success. Tip number 4. This is one of the most important tips for success you need to ensure when you start a new job. Think of it this way. The quicker your boss may rely on you, the sooner they'll focus their attention on other pressing matters. If your boss finds you trustworthy, they'll delegate tasks to you. Make sure you meet your deadlines and keep your promises. It's critical, especially early on in your relationship with your boss, that you fulfill every commitment you make. Tip number 5. Everyone can turn their problems into their manager's problems. Be the solution provider, not the problem creator. Great employees solve problems. If you don't have the authority to give the final answers important to your department, then make sure you offer good ideas to your boss and try to cooperate as much as you can, wholeheartedly. Tip number 6. Being a good employee requires understanding that your manager and fellow employees are doing their best. Being upset is not going to do anyone any good. Neither will constantly complaining about how much work you're doing. At the end of the day, everyone is doing their fair share of the work they're getting paid for. If you try to understand your colleagues and give them a helpful hand, you can create a more enjoyable work environment and better achieve your ultimate career goals. Now listen again. Once you graduate from college, your next immediate concern is how to succeed in your career. Because the world has become so competitive, doing well in your job and moving forward with your career is more important now than ever. In our program, you will hear 6 tips on how to be excellent at work. Tip number 1. Today's career requirements are highly developed and require much more than someone who is not willing to take risks. In today's competitive professional market, employers are looking for individuals who can bring fresh ideas to the table and start new projects, come up with new ideas, and create new opportunities for the business. Tip number 2. To excel in your career, you have to be willing to learn to become a leader. No matter what university you graduated from or what grades you had, professional life will be very different from college. Be prepared to have a million questions every day regarding what you're doing. It might take you days to get used to your duties at your new job, so show management that you are coachable, paying attention and always willing to discover new things. Tip number 3. Remember, you're not being paid for working hard or staying busy. At the end of the day, what matters to your employer is how you're contributing to fulfilling the company's aims and mission, both short-term and long-term. Therefore, keep in mind that you're being paid to contribute to the company's performance and vision. Bearing these aims in mind will help you achieve career success. Tip number 4. This is one of the most important tips for success you need to ensure when you start a new job. Think of it this way. The quicker your boss may rely on you, the sooner they'll focus their attention on other pressing matters. If your boss finds you trustworthy, they'll delegate tasks to you. Make sure you meet your deadlines and keep your promises. It's critical, especially early on in your relationship with your boss, that you fulfill every commitment you make. Tip number 5. Everyone can turn their problems into their manager's problems. Be the solution provider, not the problem creator. Great employees solve problems. If you don't have the authority to give the final answers important to your department, then make sure you offer good ideas to your boss and try to cooperate as much as you can, wholeheartedly. Tip number 6. Being a good employee requires understanding that your manager and fellow employees are doing their best. Being upset is not going to do anyone any good. Neither will constantly complaining about how much work you're doing. At the end of the day, everyone is doing their fair share of the work they're getting paid for. If you try to understand your colleagues and give them a helpful hand, you can create a more enjoyable work environment and better achieve your ultimate career goals. Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. The listening section is now over. Please stop working on this section. Now go on to the next sections of the test.